Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Debra and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome. I'm Dr. Debra.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
Okay, this is the end of your birthday celebration.
I know.
Well, you can have another week, but how was it?
I'm like in postpartum birthday blues.
Oh.
I know. No, it was amazing. I had such a great time. We went to Pasadena Friday night. David and I, like, low-key stayed at a really nice hotel. Saturday went to an escape room.
Oh, you did?
Uh-huh.
You
so
love that.
He took me to an escape room. It was so much fun. We got out. And then...
Clearly.
Exactly. And then Saturday night, my other friend who has my birthday, it's sort of funny. Well, we have the same birthday, I should say.
No, it's yours.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
mine.
She stole it.
Had an 80s party. Did you see my pictures? I'll have to show you.
I did not.
Oh, my God.
Is it on... Facebook?
It's on Facebook. I'll show you after. It was so much fun. I dressed to like the nines. I'll explain to you really fast what I was wearing because it was like so much fun. So basically, I got a...
Did you get a wig?
I didn't get a wig, but I put my hair in a side pony. I did blue eyeshadow. I had like a tutu. I had leg warmers, and you'll see. And David wore a Save Ferris shirt and a bandana. And
this is hysterical.
Isn't that funny?
I wish we had a viewing audience.
I know. You could see. But I was impressed with how it turned out.
You guys are so cute. Is there a way to put this picture up on our LA Talk Radio?
Oh, my God. I'll ask David. If he gives the approval, I'm fine with it.
Look at London.
And then London wore my costume the next day. But the funny thing is...
What's the hamster?
I didn't tell you. Now we have three hamsters, four fish... Two kids.
And a partridge and a pear tree?
Pretty much. And we're thinking about another dog, which is just insane.
That is insane.
It's too much. But I'm a little nutty.
Who's the hamster lover?
The hamster. So what happened is we got two hamsters, Lissa and Cutie. And then Lissa died.
Oh, no.
And Remy was hysterical.
Oh.
And Remy's my 8-year-old, for those who don't know. And we took him to the vet. We tried to save him. It was so sad. It was like a pet ER. But he didn't make it. And so, you know, he wanted another one. And so... I can't just get one. He felt bad leaving the family behind. So now we have, so we got two more, and now and you can't put them in the same cage if they don't grow up together.
Oh.
So two were in one cage, and then we had to get a whole other cage.
Of course. Now, what are the two new ones' names?
The two new ones are Stella and Ruby.
I love it.
Isn't that cute?
You know, Tiffany like begged me when she was younger to get a dwarf rabbit. So we had this little bunny we called Bun Bun. The little bugger, he got some sort of brain disorder when he was 3 years old, and he would spin in his cage. And I was panicked, and I had to find an exotic vet because a regular vet will not treat a rabbit.
Oh, my God.
So I found this exotic pet vet.
Yeah.
Like I have the acupunctures for the cat right now. And took him to... the vet, and I actually kept him alive for another year. I nursed him back with a little feeder, and it went away for a whole year, and then it came back, and then it was just little bun.
That is so sweet.
And the only... I had a strange cat at that time named Baxter who had to be sequestered because he literally tried to wreck every piece of furniture in the house, and he loved the rabbit. You could put the rabbit next to the cat, and he would calm down.
That's
amazing.
It was
like his therapy bun.
It was his emotional support animal.
So cute.
Oh,
my goodness.
How about you? How was your non-birthday weekend?
My non-birthday weekend, it's a little past a half birthday, so we can't call it any birthday. I actually went to a continuing education seminar on ethics with one of my favorite people, the consultant I use all the time, Dr. Pamela Harmel. She's just amazing.
Yes.
I had no idea how funny she is.
Oh, that's
good. She was literally hysterical. She had video clips of hysterical stuff like HIPAA gone too far. It was so funny.
You need that.
Little robots. It was just... Anyway, she was very comical. Aww. She's a little munchkin, so she is running across the stage and having fun. And so for 6 hours, I laughed.
Wow, that's so
good. How do you go to an ethics seminar and laugh?
Is it just for psychologists? I want to go to this.
Oh, no, anybody. Yeah, next time she's having one, you can just probably go on her website and you can find what she's doing next one. She's really great.
Oh,
I love her.
Good.
Yeah, so that was it. And then just hung out on Saturday, had dinner with the step family on Sunday night. Mm-hmm. And my stepmom's getting up there.
Mm.
I love
her. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. But anyway, so good. Yeah, good weekend and Super Bowl Sunday coming up.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite?
I don't even know who's playing. I'm just going to be straight with you. I'm not. I was going to bullshit and be like, yeah,
I would
the,
think
the underdog.
You would watch for the commercials because apparently, you know, Super Bowl is always known for their
the commercials. Yeah. I probably
$5 million for a 30-second spot.
That's insane. So you're putting your commercial up there?
I'd like somebody to pay $5 million to have a spot on our show.
I know, right?
All right, anybody who's willing, who wants to donate $5 million, please.
We'll accept, happily.
Give us a call.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, moving on.
Yeah,
is there anything else you wanted to share?
No, I was going to talk about last week. We had Dr. Alyssa Epel. I'm pronouncing it right. The telomere effect, and it was about anti-aging, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, my telomeres are elongating as we speak.
I was going to ask you, did it stop you from doing anything? Like
no.
After you heard,
did it stop
no.
you?
No,
I Please. Did more.
You know what's funny? It's like I think you have that moment, but then it's hard to.
Not true, actually. I've been drinking decaf coffee for decades since
okay.
I was pregnant with my daughter. She said that 2 cups of coffee, regular coffee,
is okay.
Was good. So I bought actual whole bean vanilla nut coffee. And my daughter had convinced me that coffee goes rancid like instantaneously. So that when you buy it already ground, it's not good. So I bought myself a grinder. So yay, Tiffany.
Oh my God.
And Michael, and I'm getting whole bean coffee. And I did make a change.
Do you notice anything with the caffeine?
No, because I just did it this morning. Yes, I do notice.
Hyper. You really are. This makes complete sense to me right now. But even decaf, I think, is okay if they do it naturally.
The
you'll
water
have the
processed decaf.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I discovered when I was. I buy the fair trade.
That's what I do. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was pre ground because it was easier.
So. I know.
Grinder, and it did not scare Mr. Prowler this morning. I'm grinding coffee while he was eating.
He's like sweet chicken.
Didn't skip a beat. 4 courses this morning. Ate.
He's your London.
Yes.
Like my son,
but with cancer. I mean,
that's
amazing. But I know he's going to go into remission. He's just doing great.
That's fantastic.
Good. All right, today we have an awesome guest. This might be our first guest who is from Hawaii, and she's actually going to be chatting with us today in Hawaii. Very exciting. Okay. As a thought leader, first of all, this is Dr. Saida Desilet. I think I got it
right.
Okay. She wants to live in a world filled with audacious, sexually sovereign women living life on their own terms. As a thought leader and body philosopher, she has published several books, The Emergence of the Sexual Woman and The Illustrious Jade Egg, and had her innovative method featured in works by Dr. It's Christine, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I think Christine Northrup's and Dr. Rachel Abrams. After 2 decades of dedicated embodied professional practice, Saida is as the visionary spokesperson for sexual sovereignty movement. Saida has created 7 online courses to assist women and to successfully embody their sensuality while enhancing their sexual health. Saida launched her year-long ambassador program for professional women who wish to bring her psychosexual methods into their line of work. And without further ado, welcome Dr. Saida.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here. Absolutely loved your banter. Oh my God, I was like grinning ear to ear. Love animals, and I am a big fan of the telomere effect book as well. So I was like, wow, I love these ladies already. It's going to be a great conversation.
Well, I have to tell you, so I had never heard of the jade egg before. And then we got your book and I started to look through it and I read the section on the jade egg and I got one. And I am so excited to tell you that I have been wearing it for like 2 or 3 days. So I cannot wait to talk about it. So I'll let you talk all about it, but it is fascinating.
That's so exciting.
Yeah.
By the way, The Emergence of the Sensual Woman, your book, Awakening Our Erotic Innocence, has the prettiest cover. Did you help design that?
Actually, I did. It was an amazing, the whole project was a project of love. And I remember we got everything done and then we went, oh no, we don't have a book cover. And like, how do you do a book cover that's not going to be pornographic? Because I wanted it to appeal to all women visually. And one of my favorite flowers is the lily that you see on the book. And so we bought this boisterous, shameless, wide open lily. Sprayed her down with a little bit of water and just took a bunch of pictures, and that was the result of the cover.
That's
beautiful.
Amazing.
That's very beautiful. Wow. Okay, so where did
Thank
your
you.
Own personal journey of reclamation start?
Yeah, this question is always a really fun dive for me. I'm going to give just like a quick prehistory and then the actual moment. The prehistory, because I have a very unusual past, is that I was born to French-Canadian parents but raised on First Nation reservations in the middle of Canada. So what that means is I was a little alien in this foreign culture, you know, raised by very passionate, loving parents who were very open about sexuality, but in a culture where sexuality was being profusely abused. And wow. So our house became a shelter for a lot of women suffering from domestic abuse and sexual abuse.
Wow.
And my friends, my young friends, obviously were experiencing a lot of difficulty. In fact, my very first day of school, the teacher molested all of us within the first 10 minutes of class.
What?
So it was like one of those environments. Yeah, can you believe it? It's insane.
How old were you?
Well, I guess you're six in grade one.
Oh,
I
my
can't remember
gosh.
Me. Around 5 or 6 years old. And I was the only child. This is why I bring it up, because yeah. It's going to be relevant to our talk later. I was the only child that went back home and said something.
Oh, wow.
And my parents obviously instantly believed me. They did something. So the very next day, we had a different teacher. She was on, the teacher of day one. And so that was, you know, my background. I was exposed to a lot of things, but I also knew about boundaries. I knew, you know, what was right, what was wrong around sexuality and my body, and I was learning all these things. And so by the time I was 20, which takes us to the reclamation moment, I had a very startling and intense experience where I was raped, but the rape was so intense that when I had to fly home from the experience. I was in the Caribbean, and I felt very, very sick after the experience, and I had to go into surgery. And when I came out of surgery, I was told I had 2 weeks to live. And so there was that moment, right? It's so like, are you kidding me?
can you just pause
you're
for a
stunned
second?
When this stuff happens to you, it's there is no orientation to life. Like, as much as I was exposed to violence and these occurrences and, you know, witnessed a lot, when it happens to you, there's a stunning moment where you're just almost out of your body, you're out of your senses, you don't even know how to place it.
I don't want to be too
and
personal,
then,
but can you just pause
yeah.
for 1 second and please, if you will, so you were given 2 weeks to live based on the rape? Like, something had seriously damaged
yeah, so,
your internal...
So, yeah, so what had happened was I was anally raped, and then I got a form of PID from the experience.
Oh, my God.
And by the time I got home to get help, because I was very sick, it had gone out of hand. So the surgeon said there was nothing they could do on their end because the infection had spread throughout my entire torso.
Oh, my gosh.
So it was pretty, you know, it was a big deal. It wasn't like a little thing, and it was extremely painful. It was like agony. And but that reclamation moment, why I'm sharing, why it's so intense, and I want to share it because I have really passionate views around healing around sexual trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to be honest about my journey. And the reclamation moment began when I defied the surgeon. Began when I was told, you're going to die. And I went, wait a second, is that going to be what I choose?
Wow.
Because I really want to live. Mm-hmm. I really want to live. It was the first time in my life where I really wanted to live.
Right. Sure.
And that was the first real conscious choice as a person that was wholly dedicated mind, body, soul. And that, I believe, was a turning point on my young adult journey.
Wow.
Everything that unfolded from that was informed from this very primal choice to live.
This is incredible.
I'm
I know, we're still shocked.
Boy, talk about turning adversity into strength.
Yes.
I mean, you are the poster woman for that. Can you say some of the things that you held on to, what beliefs you had, what you did that would help inspire some of our audience if they ever encounter such a potentially... Mm-hmm. tragic experience.
Yeah. And I need to let you know that at that time I had no training. I hadn't read fancy books. I mean, I was literally, I was a farm girl who'd been trained in like a ballet school. Like, I wasn't very worldly at this age. And so the things that I came up with, they probably were harvested from observation, but I can't refer them to a specific person or book. The one thing that made, I think, my recovery so powerful and so thorough is that it never occurred to me that I was a victim of rape. Mm. Those words were given to me much later on the journey. Mm-hmm. I knew I'd had the experience. I wasn't in denial of the experience. I just didn't take on that I was a victim of it. And later in life, after getting my psychology PhD, like all this stuff, I went, oh my gosh, like what an orientation. Wow. So, but what it did for my young self is that it allowed me to just go for things. I wasn't identified with being a helpless victim that needed, you know, the perpetrator to, you know, atone for his sins. And I didn't need like all these conditions to heal. They didn't exist in my mind. And so I was able to really trust every moment, and it were not obvious sometimes. You know, sometimes it was intense, chaotic emotion. Sometimes there were some physical parts that I really had to go through and face and heal. But I was doing it from a very open-hearted place versus a place that I was forever going to be wounded by this experience. I actually believed that I could heal myself. And that maybe came through some other life experiences where I did heal myself of some very big miraculous things, like when I was a very young child. So maybe it came from that. Another thing that was very important to me is that the powerful people in my life, like my parents, a shaman elder that I looked up to, they all encouraged me to go laugh. When I called them and said, I've been told I'm going to die, and I have 2 weeks. They all said, you need to go watch a funny movie, or they started to laugh, or they're like, we're going to pray for you, don't worry about it, you're good. And so there was something about having a support network that saw me as powerful and that saw me as capable of healing without saying those words, that I think was hugely impactful. And I think we do a lot of disservice to people who go through sexual trauma to hold them as this incapable, powerless creature that, you know, doesn't have capacity anymore. Of course we have capacity. We've gone through a big thing, but we have tremendous capacity. And so that's one of the foundations of my life's work has been to bring this to women where all levels of trauma, because some are mild and some are pretty intense, and bring the orientation that we are all powerful and that none of us are broken. Those are the two big premises of my work.
Wow, I'm going to be really crude here for a minute, but you really did a fuck you to your perpetrator. Way to go.
Yeah.
You mean to show him.
Yeah, way to go. God, it's an amazing vindication.
But you know, what's so beautiful is I was watching videos of you, and you have a really beautiful energy. And the lay person would have no idea of your story. Mm. Like usually, you know, as a therapist, we're kind of trained to, you know, we can sort of see pain or, you know, people who've gone through a lot. And watching your YouTube videos, you have a lightness, and it's, you can tell that you've just done a lot of healing, and I'm so impressed by all of it.
Just amazing.
Thank you.
You know, since we're in these times right now, the exposure of sexual harassment, I wonder if from your wisdom and your experience, could you have some words of advice maybe to women in these really awful situations where they're in the workplace and, you know,
getting harassed?
Yeah, and getting harassed. Do you have some? I know this is kind of off topic, but
And it's not off topic. It's actually all, you know, it's all within women's empowerment, right? It's all within us, like claiming our bodies, claiming our vitality, claiming our pleasure, claiming our voice. What I feel that's amazing right now, but kind of for human beings, where we're at in our evolution, is that we're actually on that little edge of maturing emotionally and sexually. It's beginning. I'm starting to see it. Mm-hmm. Collectively, there's a change. And so part of that change is to use your voice. So recently I talked to a lawyer friend. I said, so what do women do? You know, you're at work. Like, what legally, like, what happens? And she said to me that the workplace is not responsible for the first violation. You have to report it. And then if there's a secondary violation, if there's been a first report, then there's something to go on. Mm-hmm. And I was shocked that that was what was going on. So if something has happened, it must be reported. Just do it.
Yeah.
Even if it's a walk through the parking lot and some weird dude is trying to talk to you, you call the police. You said, it's not an emergency, but I just want to report this incident. Here's what the person looks like. Mm. Here's why. if all of a sudden something does happen to someone else and the description fits that and there's been six other people who've done that report, it's really clear to the police who that is.
Wow.
If nobody says anything, it's a lot harder.
Yes.
So mm-hmm. we have almost like not only obligations to ourselves and our own bodies, but to each other as a community to let people know, hey, this isn't okay. And it's not shameful. It's actually, you know, I'm hoping that wherever we are, that it is an easy process. Sometimes it's not. I think certain states and environments, maybe it's not as easy for women to come forward. But I think now this climate, legally people are aware that they need to make it more easy.
Mm-hmm.
There's even been talks of having anonymous call centers where people could call anonymously if they're really intimidated and don't want to be identified. Just so at least there's a track record. So that's the first thing, is use your voice to let people know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing, which is more important to me, is know your own boundaries. Like, actually know them. What I've realized, the greatest harm we've ever done to raising girls is we teach little girls to be nice girls. Mm-hmm. And nice girls are taught to override their instincts.
Yes, definitely.
And to be pleasant. And that's not okay, because those instincts are what will help that girl who becomes a woman be able to clue into her environment, actually read signals far ahead of something actually happening and be able to respond. So we're numbing that down, we're dimming that down, this ability that, you know, served us. How long have we been on this planet surviving with wild creatures, right? We have this ability to know when danger is around or something's not quite right. And yet we socialize it out of especially girls.
Mm-hmm. You
that's know, the first thing I do with women. It's like, hey,
yeah.
Know your boundaries. Know that this is your space and claim that space.
It's interesting because Kelly knows this. I've said it many times on the show, but the word nice literally means pretending not to know. So when we ask our children to be nice, we're telling them to
stay
in denial.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It's like it's so poignant. So it's like my least favorite word on the planet, but isn't that amazing? It's like, wow. So what you're saying is just so poignant.
What I always think about, there was an Oprah episode where there was an expert on fear, and he said the same sort of thing, that women especially, they have that instinct and they ignore it because they want to be polite,
right?
And more than men, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, I'd rather sort of be nice and not be a bitch and get killed than have this reputation of being bitchy and, you know, I mean,
insanity,
it's amazing.
Right?
Yeah.
Total insanity. And and your first point I thought was really important, too, because I'm hopeful that with this whole movement, even if, you know, Hollywood is the lead candidate on many of these things, it's through Hollywood that things change. But
yeah,
the idea that the old good old boys club maybe
yes.
is being broken up,
yes.
because historically, if a woman actually reported sexual abuse, particularly in a male-dominated climate, she was let go in some
capacity.
And then,
sure.
And then it's in the community. And I've known many women where it's been really hard for them to get another job.
Awful.
Yeah. It's true, and it's a very important thing that you say there. And thankfully, it's happening, right? So let's do it. So one of my things that I'm loving right now, and I'm sure you feel like the kind of women that you love this too, is I'm more interested in the now what. Okay, so we've know that we need to voice things. We know we need to ask for accountability. There has to be accountability. But now what is the living edge of this conversation? Because what kind of world do we want to live in? What does it look like at work? What does it look like when we're socializing or even just walking, you know, your grocery parking lot? How do we want that to be? And we need to talk about it. We need to talk about it with our friends and you know, on these kinds of shows. It's so important because collectively we have not come together with a very clear, this is what we would love.
Mm-hmm.
We all know what we don't like.
Mm.
We're really clear on what we hate and what we don't like, but that doesn't allow us to create something new.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It just keeps us in the same cycle. Well, that's great. We're rebellious. We hate it. Okay, we get that. But it's not changing. So either the Me Too movement will become like another thing in history and we just keep repeating it, or it's an opportunity to really break a pattern.
Yep.
And as you know, if you work with trauma, you've got to do a pattern interrupt. We've got to do a pattern interrupt with this conversation and actually get creative. So I want to know, Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly, like, what would you love? in relation to, you know, interacting with other people around your sexuality, your personal space, you know, men, women.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I'll just go first and say, well, first of all, I love that. I love when women can come forward and talk about sexuality and not feel ashamed about it and not feel embarrassed. So putting the whole Me Too movement aside, just in general, I think it's so important that you know, the cliche, like we reclaim our sexuality and we feel good about it and there's no embarrassment and there's no shame. I still feel like, you know, a guy is sort of the stud, you know, if he, you know, hooks up with somebody, but the women, it's still like, you know, she's kind of slutty and there is that kind of shame with women having pleasure. And so I love that you and all the other pioneers out there are really trying to make this message known, like this is not only is it okay, but let me help you even further along in your journey. So that's what I'm hoping more of is really just putting less shame around it and you know, and creating, you know, more avenues for other women to learn about this. I think it's wonderful.
Well, very well said. And I would just add, because body shame, I think, is one of the most important things that I'd love to see us just revolutionize our experience of acceptance of the variance of the female body, just depreciation for all the different contours and sizes and shapes, because we are so hard on each other. I mean, we still have these standards to be emaciated or to be super voluptuous, you know, but either extreme, not working. And so unrealistic, it makes us just, I mean, it's so hard to just walk around on the planet as a woman and to feel confident about oneself.
Yeah.
So I would just love to see that emergence of love and acceptance among all of us.
And the other
thing, because a woman who,
go ahead, no worries.
Go ahead. I think a woman who loves herself, who's like really at home in her body, that kind of confidence is unshakable. That kind of confidence is unstoppable. And so, of course, it makes sense that you would want to shake a woman's confidence if you want to create like consumers who buy a bunch of things, like, you know, they don't think they're powerful enough or beautiful enough or this enough. Of course you want to do that. That's kind of the climate that we live in. But we can change that. And we can still thrive. We can still, you know, have awesome products and celebrate all that. But coming from a place of joy versus I'm not enough or I'm not good enough. Mm-hmm. And I totally agree about body shame. In fact, one of the first things I teach, I have something called the Jade Egg Mastery course. And the very first week, the very first exercise is called body love meditation. Mm-hmm. Because there's no way that you're going to be enjoying your sensuality if you don't enjoy your own body.
So
there's, you know, that's the starting place. And it's remarkable how many women will write me and say, I was just sobbing. Oh. I was just sobbing through that practice.
Wow.
And the, you know, what happens when she starts to be more gentle, even in her self-talk around her body, it really remarkable.
Wow. If you just tuned in, we are talking with Dr. Saida Desilet with a T-S at the end, and she is awesome. She is the author of Emergence of the Sensual Woman. Come on, sexy gals, let's get on with this.
And her newest book, Desire,
let's embrace our sexuality, our sensuality, our bodies. Really awesome. Okay, so now I'm really intrigued about the Jade Goddess.
The Jade Egg.
And the Jade Egg. So do tell.
Okay, great. I love it, love it, love it. Thank you, ladies. I want to say right before I answer the question on the Jade Goddess and the Jade Egg and all that, I want to say this one piece for all women and men too. This is all human beings, that we literally make sense of reality through sensuality. Our sensuality is how we process and make sense of this whole thing. So the more sensual that we are, the more good information we have, the more connected we are, the more functional we are, not less. And sensuality encompasses sexuality, but it's not just the act of sex. So I want to encourage everyone on this call to just notice even today, like, which sense is the most dominant and can you enjoy it just a little more? And which sense are you the least connected to and can you enhance that a little bit and just make that a playful experience for yourself? Because as you develop sensuality, you will everything else blossoms from that place, including keeping yourself safe.
Exactly. And we forget about sensations, right? We always talk about feelings and thoughts, but we just lose sight of that. Intuition, sensory experiences, that's the premise of who we are as humans, right? Yes. We forget about that. So that's a great point. Okay, come on. Come on, Jade.
Absolutely. She's like, tell me about the egg.
Right. So I want to say that what I wrote in the book was the journey that I took myself on for my full reclamation and my full healing. And you don't need to have had any trauma to enjoy exploring the topics and going deeper, because really it's the idea with the jade egg and the method that I created is this is a profound relationship with yourself. You're kind of harvesting and cultivating a very deep intimacy. And if you can do that with yourself, it will translate into the bedroom and in other areas mm-hmm. of your life. So I really believe that we are our primary partner first and foremost, and how we relate to ourselves, especially sensually and sexually, is very important. So the egg, let's just say what that is, because some of you might not know what it is. It's a little piece of real jade. So we're talking a high-quality jade that's drilled and shaped into a little kind of egg, a little egg shape. It's not very big. And it goes inside the vagina. And so why we use this...
Kelly!
I have a very funny story that I'm going to share with you guys after she explains this, by the way. You'll appreciate it.
So there's the first layer. So maybe your story can come after the first layer. But the first layer is just... Imagine if you're not interested in sex at all, you have no, you know, you're kind of like, that's not my thing or whatever. You have to, as women, just at least take your sexual health into your own hands. All the issues that affect women, prolapse, vaginal dryness, vaginal wall thinning, less and less orgasm, or more difficulty to have orgasm. Like a lot of the problems that I see, and I work a lot with a leading gynecologist, and what I have found is when we just have the egg itself in the vagina on a physical level, you can create the kind of vagina that is resilient and vibrant throughout life. I've had women in their mid-70s have full reclamation of their sexual health and get young boyfriends. So on a physical level, even if you're never to be sexual, to avoid prolapses and all these problems, you do need some skill, and it's not a skill that our society has given women. We should actually be giving these skills to young women when they get their first period, but we don't. So learn these skills at least for preventative medicine and self-care medicine.
So is this a daily exercise, or you insert it in your vagina morning, noon, and night? You leave it there all day long? Give us the protocol here.
Yeah. So let's do the protocol. So first of all, yes, you can wear it. For some women, even just the insertion part is a whole new level of awareness and training. So I'm not advocating just popping it in and going. And there's a reason for that. And the reason for that is you are more than just the body. Your deep heart, your deep felt nature, your essence as a woman is very connected cellularly to your vagina. There's like this immense connection. It's incredible. So that's the psychosexual piece. So if we are able to ask permission, like, I'd like to ask permission, you know, Ken, are you interested in the egg right now? Maybe my body's going to go, no. Maybe she's going to go, hell yeah, bring that thing over here, you know. I don't know what mood she's in. I need to check in. Secondly, most of us have had rushed experiences sexually. We, you know, just push a tampon in, or we go see a doctor and the speculum goes in, but there's not much warm-up, let's say. It's just like, you know, this business is how we're going to do it. Or even sexually with lovers, they don't often enter with a lot of care. So that first stage of allowing your body to draw in the egg, it's a very special practice where you actually teach your body to pull in the egg, which is an unusual thought, right? Mm-hmm. You've always been pushed into the idea that your body can pull something in is disorienting at times. But it is a skill we can learn, and when we learn it, it's profound, not only on a physical level, but in terms of our confidence and pleasure, it's profound.
Okay, I'm just trying to be the audience here. The next question is, well, how do you get it out?
Oh, you use a string. So you say it. Now
give
I'm an expert on this.
Kelly, hopefully so none of your clients are listening.
No, I'm open about this. And I'm happy because I feel like I said, I want to promote this type of thing. So I'm happy. Okay, so basically there's two types of what I'm learning of the jade eggs. One has the drilled hole in it. where you can string dental floss through it, and then you can just get a plain egg that doesn't have a hole through it. So
which
for beginners,
get?
So I got the ones with the hole where
okay.
you can, and you basically take unwaxed dental floss and you string it through. So it's kind of, you know, in essence, I'm just going to use the word like a tampon, in the sense that, you know, that way you use the string to pull out the egg. But just so you know, naturally, your body, you know, will expel it anyway, kind of on its own. So don't worry. I imagine a lot of listeners are like, oh my God, what if it gets stuck up there, or, you know, something like that. But
so I want to just know, yeah. this is a little bit off the jade egg, but you talked about tampons. My
yeah.
very first experience with a tampon, I'll share, since yeah. you're being so candid here,
yeah.
was I guess I was 12. We were in Mexico with my family, and
okay.
I got my
first
period.
Your first period?
Yeah.
Okay.
And no one ever talked to me about this or what
yeah.
you do or anything like that. And I was, like, really scared. And I asked my mom, like, what do I do? And she I guess she had a tampon. She just go in the bathroom and shove it up there. I spent an hour trying to figure out how you do this thing. She didn't give me the instruction thing.
No.
I had no idea what
oh.
I was supposed to do. And I fainted. And I almost hit my head on the porcelain toilet.
Oh, my God. This is so upsetting. Oh.
Well,
wait,
that
okay.
was my
okay,
tampon
but he,
story.
But I have a very funny, and then we'll hear back from Sayeda. But my funny story is I've been using this jade egg, and I put it in this morning. This is very funny, and I love how open I am about this. And, you know, you forget it's there. And I took Moose for a walk, my dog. And about maybe three-fourths of the way in, I feel it coming out. I felt like I was giving birth, slightly. And I'm like, oh, my God. So I'm holding it in. My pelvic muscles are, like, strong as an ox right now. I'm trying to hold this thing in until I get home. So that's my funny story.
I love it. It would have been funny if Moose would have tried to eat it.
Oh, God.
No. All right. We're getting gross here.
Yes.
Carry on. So I love
You're
it.
Funny. It's good to have a sense of humor about these things.
Yes.
Because the egg will, you know, I could probably write a book of all the incidences of eggs coming out. Like a woman who is a top, you know, executive. She was presenting to a room full of men, very, very high level presentation, and her egg slowly rolled down her pant leg and under the table where everyone was sitting. Another, you know, walking down the Safeway aisle. But here's the deal. Like, if it falls out publicly, there's no one in their right mind that's going to go, oh, that just came out of her vagina.
Exactly.
They just don't.
Yeah.
They're going to think it came out of a pocket. Like,
it's true.
They're not going to jump to those conclusions. It just won't happen.
Yep.
So you can relax up that way, unless there's another jade egg user who happens to witness you, and then she'll have a twinkle in her eye and, you know, give you a wink or something.
Winking, exactly.
So,
I love it.
But I do.
So the string is there. I just want to mention with the string part, because you asked a question about it. It is very important to have that. And it's not just for beginners. So here's what happens. You first use it with the string so you have confidence and ease. You don't want to yank the egg out because you'll hurt yourself. So you learn literally how to birth the egg, like push it out, which is an amazing skill, because you're also training your body to have deeper pelvic floor, deeper vaginal orgasms in that same process. So it has multiple functions. It's very cool. Later, when you become more advanced, then there's advanced practices that you do where you actually use the string. So there's like some pulling practices, et cetera, that kind of work the pelvic floor a little bit more. So you can keep using that same egg. You really don't need to keep changing eggs. And I'm not an advocate for the closed eggs, purely because of the amount of panic emails I've received where women can't get those ones out.
Oh, I imagine.
Okay.
That would scare the crap out of me. And not the egg.
Yeah. So unless you're like uber skilled at birthing eggs, you're a good like jade egg chicken, as I like to call it, and you can lay that egg real quick, I wouldn't advise it. It's just, you know, maybe if you're very experienced, it's a different story. But most women don't use it enough to have a lot of experience. And it's nerve-wracking when something stays stuck inside you.
Sure.
And it's like, oh, my God, get this thing out. It will come out eventually, as you said. Your body will naturally release it, but not when you're really freaking out, because you're tightening all the muscles when you're scared. So as you relax more, then the egg will come out.
So I saw in your book, so again, we're talking with Sayeda Desolée, and the book that we're talking about is Emergence of the Sensual Woman. And you talked a lot about the practices within there, but are you also, is it good just to sort of have it in for a few hours and do nothing, or are you supposed to do the practices with it?
The answer is both and. What I would love is for women to really become masterful with their bodies and their pleasure. And it's like anything. So if you want to, you know, learn a dance and be good at dancing, you're going to need a little bit of practice. So that's what those practices are for. And the side effect of those is longevity and rejuvenation and pelvic health. So, and hormonal health, actually. It's really great for that. So that's the good news for that. And we don't always have time to do a lot of practice. I get that. So the most important is, again, ask permission. Mm-hmm. Try and do this, the thing where you're just like inviting the egg in instead of shoving it in, and teaching your body that practice, and then you can just wear it around. I wear mine all day. I mean, I was just swimming, you know, running around on the beach yesterday, and wearing my egg. You can be on the trampoline. I've gone hiking. I've gone on African safaris. I mean,
wow.
And I've amazing. Even been through, you know, airport securities with my egg.
I love this.
Are they going to? Because I was nervous. I'm like, oh my God, are they going to do like a body cavity search? You know,
right.
So I tried it and it never shows up.
That's amazing.
I don't know why. It just doesn't show up. And so we're good there, ladies. So you can take them. So that's, you know, using it is according to what's true to every woman's body. If you start feeling a little crampy and sore, you've got to get it out.
Mm-hmm.
It's the muscles being tired. Like, you know, if you haven't been to the gym and you do just even a couple things, the next day you're going to be really sore.
Yeah.
So if you're not used to working your, and there's many layers to the pelvic floor, so we're going to be addressing mm-hmm. all those layers with this training, you will get fatigued. And you can get fatigued within 5 minutes. It can happen very fast.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a bad thing. It doesn't mean anything about you. It also means nothing about you if it keeps coming out. Because when I first started using it, it would shoot across the room, like, I swear. Whoa, what just happened there? So my body, you know, was reacting in that way, and I had to reteach my pelvic floor how not to bear down every time I was standing up and moving.
Mm-hmm.
Ah. And so each of us uses our pelvic floor a little differently. You get to learn, what does yours do?
Mm-hmm.
If you've had children and there's, you know, some post-birth recovery that's needed, even if it's 10 years later, the jade egg is fabulous for helping with that.
Mm-hmm.
If there's any scar tissue, the way that in which I encourage women to use it, it's very good for softening, because we do a lot of self-massage and opening up the belly and the thighs, and just this whole area mm-hmm. gets some loving attention.
Wow. So I want to actually read something, a little short piece from your book at the beginning of chapter 7. Because I just think it gives
sure.
our listeners just a really lovely sense of who you are and how you write. And I just want to do that, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely.
Okay, this is the Jade Goddess Foundation Practices, Techniques to Awaken and Hone Our Energetic System. And Kelly, if you want, it's on page, not exactly sure, 2 before 91, so 89.
Okay, perfect, got it.
The journey begins with one small step. That's all it takes to create a new resonance. Along the way, each step so precious, so huge and perfect. Mindfully, I walk stepping lightly upon the earth, leaving no mark other than a gentle sigh as my toes massage the skin of our mother. All too soon, the steps shall transform into the beats of my wings as I lift off into the wild expanse of the brandless heavens. So beautiful.
Mm, beautiful.
And you write one of these in the beginning of each chapter.
Yeah. I wanted to, I am a poet. I love writing sensual poetry. And I felt it was really important, especially with women's work. And when I'm with you in person, how I would guide you is I'd first put you in a state of relaxation, a state where you're aware of your senses and your sensuality before getting into your mind. So I wanted to create kind of a sensual experience with the poems as you enter a new chapter.
Mm, so beautiful. Absolutely. So lovely.
I have another question, too, because I think this is kind of relevant, and I imagine our listeners would want to know, too. So there's a couple new techniques on the market. One is called Mona Lisa, and the other is FemiLift, and it's basically where... Have you heard of this? Or no? Okay. So what it is a like a basically a probe goes off your vagina and little, I guess it's like micro currents. I don't know exactly, but it basically creates like micro tears in the vagina. And apparently it's supposed to help the vagina
self-heal?
Heal, lubricate more, things like that, because I guess it creates more, you know, elasticity and collagen and everything like that. And so I would love your take around this and if you've heard of this.
Well, yeah, I had not heard the specific language of that, but I have heard of many different procedures that are being done right now, including, you know, making vaginas smaller and tighter and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love that you brought this up because I think it's really important. We're a funny culture. We're a funny culture that we believe that women have to have really tight vaginas in order to have pleasure.
Yes.
Because pleasure actually doesn't come from the tightness. It comes from the surrender and the softening open. So tone is important, obviously, because, you know, there's an aliveness, there's a tonacity there. But we want to be also able to surrender. There are more women now, even young women as young as 20, with stage 3 and 4 prolapses, because they're working out, they're creating so much tone in their pelvises, actually causing prolapsing. It's inhibiting pleasure. And, I mean, there's a lot of issues that we're having with these funny thoughts. The other funny thought that we have is that somehow our vaginas are not intelligent, that we have to do something to them to make them better.
Mm.
And so I prefer the topic of erotic intelligence. I actually believe each of us has a deep erotic intelligence. And if we can tap into that, I like the non-invasive ways where a woman can be empowered in herself. A, first of all, to deeply love and accept herself exactly as she is a big deal.
Yes.
Secondly, having the power when she is able to do just some simple things for herself where the transformation happens, because lubrication, where you feel there's a sensation of more tone and more tightness, but you're also able to completely soften, and you've mm-hmm. given that to yourself, that is very empowering. And it's not expensive. It just is an investment of time, obviously.
Right.
So I'm less interested in surgical procedures unless they're absolutely necessary, which in some cases they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm more interested in going, okay, well, let's not be so drastic. Let's actually, it's kind of like the idea of, okay, nobody would ever go to a gym. They would just get big implants to look like they have muscular arms, mm-hmm. but they never work out their arms. They're like, oh, did you hear about these cool
yes.
implants? Makes you look buff.
Uh-huh.
How we're treating the vagina. We're walking around with atrophied pelvises because that's what happens in a sitting culture. It's no one's fault. We mm-hmm. sit, we atrophy. That's just how it is. So, and we don't teach anyone around this. We fill women with all these ideas that unless their vaginas are the specific way, then they're not viable as a sexual being, which I think is horrible and harmful to a woman's psyche. And then we profit off her insecurity by, you know, promoting all these invasive yeah. procedures that for the most part are not necessary.
Probably created by a misogynist. I was listening to you talk about that, Kelly, and I was thinking, that just sounds like a new version of Botox for the vagina.
Well, it's funny. It's called Mona Lisa. I mean, think about it. Like a beautiful painting.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
No,
it's kind
lines
of interesting.
Of expression.
Yeah.
Interesting. You will not believe this, Dr. Saida, but we are almost out of time, and we want to make sure that we give you a good plug for your website and where people can get the book and when the next book is coming out.
Oh, fantastic. I'm so excited. So there's a couple of resources I'd like to share for the women.
Mm-hmm.
TheJadeEgg.com specifically has a free ebook that you can download and a whole bunch of videos. So if you want to get started with the Jade Egg, that's like amazing free resource.
Okay.
Dare Your Desire is my main site. And the Daring Project is if you're wanting to explore a little bit more what this is all about, being more daring, you know, just where are my boundaries, how to say yes, how to say no, just how to be more vulnerable, how to be more expressed. That's for women only, thedaringproject.com.
And what about...
And then the new book, yeah.
Yes, go ahead.
I hope you have me back. I think it'll be super juicy to talk about. It's on desire, but desire as an emergent quality that lives within us, like a compass that we can trust, how it's been hijacked, and what to do about that.
Oh, I love that. And then give your Instagram name also, because I love your posts also and all of that.
Oh, thank you. I think it's just my name, which is a little hard to spell. Will this show have my written name?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We will have a little write-up on the summary of the show.
Right. So it's just Dr. Dr. Saida, S-A-I-D-A, Desile, D-E-S-I-L-E-T-S, and I'm saying it fast. Dr. Saida Desile is the Instagram.
Thank you so much for being so daring, so brave, bringing all this to the forefront. I love it. You've inspired me and made me more open physically and emotionally to all of this. So thank you so much. Really.
Yes, you have been such a delight. You have such a heartwarming message and your voice and everything. We love you. Thank you so much.
It's just such an honor to be here. I'm really excited. And I'd love to hear back how you're doing with the data egg at some time.
I'll probably have some questions, some follow-ups.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay, so you get to introduce who our guest is going to be next week. How did you find this one?
This is so interesting. I found him. I'm trying to think how I found him. Maybe on YouTube. His name is Maddox. He's an author. He is a comedian. He is hysterical. His book is Fuck Whales.
And it's spelled with an F, asterisk, C-K, Whales.
He's hilarious. I felt like we needed a little lightness in today. So it's one of the reasons I chose him. And he's just hilarious. And if you, I think I sent you this YouTube video of him, of basically he's talking about like modern inventions that like make no sense. I was crying. It was hilarious.
So all right, awesome, everybody. Thank you so much. Have a great week, and whoever you're rooting for the Super Bowl, may the best team win.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.